Welcome to Exploring Your Creative Genius. Your host, Carl Nordgren, will teach you how to take an expansive view on what it means to be creative and entrepreneurial. Carl is an entrepreneur, novelist, and a lifelong student. For 20 years, he has been learning how to help folks grow their creative capacities. Now, here's Carl.
Hello and welcome. This is Exploring Your Creative Genius. You're listening to 97.9 The Hill, the best radio station in the state. I'm so fortunate to be here with you and to be here at the studio. I'm Carl Nordgren, and this is the radio show, folks, that believes that creativity is so important in your life and all of our lives, that I refuse to define creativity. I believe what Goethe said is absolutely true about creativity, and that is thinking is better than knowing. You thinking about what it means to be creative, what it means to be innovative, what it means to be entrepreneurial is so much more useful for you than me telling you what it means to be creative. And of course, Goethe isn't universally right. I want my surgeon to know, and in fact, to have expert knowledge. But in the case of creativity, it's spot on, man. It really serves you much better for you to be thinking for yourself what it means to be creative in your life. So what I try to do is bring you lots of different perspectives so that you can craft your own understanding. I do that with guests. We don't have one today. Today, instead, I have a series of phrases, of sayings that have full creative energy in them. And I'm going to share them with you and say a little bit about each one of them. Hope you help you open them up a little bit. And here's the one I'm going to start with is the one that I've come across most recently. Just a couple of months ago, I heard this. Slow is smooth, and smooth is fast. Huh? Slow is smooth, smooth is fast. That sounds like a paradox, right? How can something be that's slow then become fast? So I'm going to pause for a moment, let you think that through a little bit. I'm not going to pause too long. What do you think that could mean? Well, in creativity, it means that, yes, we want to get started. I'm talking to you all the time about having a bias for action. When you have a new problem, a new challenge, get started. But that doesn't mean you need to rush, right? That doesn't mean you need to rush. Rushing often results in mistakes and wasted effort. You want to get going, but maybe think sort of like, well, what? How about like a potter shaping clay on a wheel? If it's forced haste, well, then the item that they're working on is likely to collapse. But a fluid motion, a nice, smooth, slow, easy, fluid motion results in elegant efficiency, right? Elegant efficiency. So slow is smooth, smooth is fast. Musicians who slowly and play a new piece of music, slowly and make sure they're playing it accurately, and that means they need to play it slowly when it's a new piece of music. They internalize those tough pieces much more effectively than a musician rushing through their mistakes just to play the whole piece. So slow is smooth, smooth is fast. John Wooden, the famous UCLA basketball coach, had a saying that overlaps this a little bit, and that is, he would say to his athletes, be quick, but don't hurry, right? Be quick, that's reactive, that's quick steps, right? That's getting in, but don't hurry, because hurry can be kind of, you know, anxious, right? I'm anxious to get this thing done. Be quick, but don't hurry. Here's one that I've shared with you a couple of times, but it's so important. We want to think about it when we can. When you're trying to take on something new, you're trying to accomplish some new mastery or a new understanding of something, first get used to it, then study it. This was shared with me a few years back as a Japanese proverb in a flipped order. The original proverb is, if you want to understand something new, if you want to get mastery over something new, first study it and then get used to it. But it really is more effective for you to see it in the other way, much more effective to you, for you if you see it in the other way. First, you want to dive in to this new thing. You want to hang out with this new thing. You want to play with it. You want to live with it. You want to touch it and you want to smell it. You want to get it on your clothes. You want to get it under your nails because now you have emotional resonance. There's some folks that say that without an emotional understanding of what's going on here, when facts come in, there's no place for them to go, right? They don't stay anywhere. They become so abstract, they go away. But when you have this emotional resonance from getting used to it, then when you study it, you now have a structure, a framework, a platform for these facts that you are learning through your study to find a place to reside. Our brain works that way. We go much, much better from the holistic understanding of something to the detailed understanding of something than we do the other way. The old trite one is, you know, the forest for the trees, right? You want to understand the forest before you become an expert on the trees that are in that forest. You want to have a good idea? Have lots of ideas. That quote comes from Linus Pauling. And Linus Pauling, for folks that don't recognize his name, is the only individual to ever win two Nobel Prizes in two different fields, as was medicine, or maybe chemistry. I always get those two confused. And the Peace Prize. Linus Pauling says you want to have a good idea, have lots of ideas, and a two-time Nobel Prize winner is somebody that I'm going to listen to. So you want to have a good creative idea? Have lots of ideas. You want to get a good perspective on this new thing that you're thinking about working on? Have lots of perspectives. Now, there are folks who say, yeah, first thought, best thought. And sure, I've had times where my first thought was my best thought, but I've learned, my experience tells me, I need to put that first thought aside. That first thought that I think is so good, I need to put it aside, but not just put it aside. I need to challenge it. I need to be a contrarian with my own thinking, right? I want to make sure that this idea that came to me so quickly hasn't just captured my imagination and I can't keep thinking, but I want to put it aside because it's a numbers game. I want to have lots of ideas, generating creative ideas is a numbers game. You're much more likely to find what you're looking for the more you generate fresh ideas. One more before the break. This show doesn't want to define creativity. Steve Jobs wasn't hesitant about defining creativity. His definition was creativity is simply connecting the dots. So make sure you have lots of dots. Close listening gives you lots of dots. Getting out into this challenge, right, where I said first get used to it before you study it, that gives you lots of dots. All those experiences are giving you lots of dots. So you want to engage the world. You get new impact, new stimulation when you engage the world, and all of that are dots that you're going to connect at some point to prove your wonderful creative genius, to exercise your wonderful creative genius. And we'll talk more about it when you come back from the break.
You're listening to Exploring Your Creative Genius with Carl Nordgren. Welcome back to Exploring Your Creative Genius. Here's your host, Carl Nordgren.
Welcome back. Thanks for coming back. This is Exploring Your Creative Genius on the best radio station in the state of North Carolina. I've been in the first segment sharing with you various phrases, various quotes, and then sort of riffing off them, right? Helping us all unpack all the creative importance, all the creative value of the quotes and the comments that I've been sharing with you. Here's one from my former president, Teddy Roosevelt. Do what you can with what you have where you are. I was guilty of this lots of times, man. I knew I had a great idea. I wanted to move forward, but before I move forward on it, I needed to get more resources. I need to get more venture capital. I need to get more of something, and then I could move forward with it. As I've matured in my creative life, I realize the wisdom of this, but I was not a practitioner of it initially. I would wait until I got all that I needed. But you want to take a low-risk start. Is there a lower risk possible when you're facing a new challenge or a new opportunity than just simply doing what you can with what you have, right? You're risking so very, very little when you just simply put what you have in play, right? Just put that into play. So thank you, President Roosevelt. When I first heard this quote that I'm going to share with you next, I was a young wannabe novelist. I was probably in my teens, early 20s, when I came across the quote from Pablo Picasso that bad artists borrow, but great artists steal. And as a young man, I thought, yeah, what a wonderful cocky in-your-face attitude that this artist had. As I matured once again, I realized there's great wisdom here. There's great wisdom here because what happens when you borrow something? It's very likely, isn't it, that you're going to be very careful with it. You're going to tend to care for what it is as in the form that you borrowed it so you can give it back as people would expect you to, right, in the shape that they're hoping to get it back. If you steal something, it's yours, right? You can do whatever you want with it. You can break it down. You can take just the piece that you need. You can integrate the whole thing into what you're working on. If you've stolen it, it's yours to do with as you choose. And what a great insight that Picasso had. I've come across one version of this quote that doesn't call them bad artists that borrow. It just calls them what average artists borrow or good artists borrow, but great artists steal. I think I've seen it in that form before. But the concept that is coming across in all cases is that, yeah, there's lots of good ideas out in the world. Take them and make them yours. Make them yours so that you can do with them what you will. I like this one so much. It's all about perception. We don't see the world the way it is. We see the world the way we are. There's a song I love about a little round planet in a big universe. Sometimes it looks blessed. Sometimes it looks cursed. Depends on what you look at, obviously. But most of all, it depends on the way that we see. And the four P professions agree with this insight. The poets and the philosophers, the psychologists and the physicists, from their very different professional perches, they all reach this same conclusion that we don't see the world the way it is. We see the world the way we are. What's the significance of that for our creative life? Well, when you intentionally declare to yourself, to your community, to the people who hold you up, when you intentionally declare to them that you are going to be your most creative self, well, your perspective begins to change because you're now seeing the world as a creative person. You're seeing the world as you now are. And that new change in your perspective of the world is going to be incremental. But I didn't say just incremental, did I? Because if you see that problem just a little bit differently today, if you see that opportunity a little bit differently than you did last week, that might be the new insight. That might be the new thoughts that help you really unpack this opportunity, finally find out why you haven't been able to wrestle this problem to the ground before, and now you'll have a chance to do it with this new thought. So we don't see the world the way it is. We see the world the way we are. When I taught at Duke, and I taught from 2002 to 2016, 14 years, I don't think I did this right away, but pretty soon, pretty early on in my time there, probably about the second or third year, I would come into a new class, the first day of a new class, and I would write on the whiteboard these words, thinking outside the box. And I'd hesitate for just a moment, and then I'd take a red marker, and I would put a big red X over thinking outside the box, and I would turn to my students, and I would say, I don't want you to say this in this class. I don't want you to say thinking outside the box. Oh, we need a new idea. Let's think outside the box. That's become such a trite phrase. It means nothing, right? There's no real value in repeating that. Instead, let's talk about if we're at that point where we might want to take the shortcut, which is a useless shortcut, and say, oh, let's think outside the box. Instead, let's say, let's understand this box. I mean, what is it made of? Why does it even exist? Maybe we want to work inside the box. maybe what was her name? Ross Kantner is her last name, a Harvard business professor. And she's about kaleidoscopic thinking. She has the insight that says that when you get all, you can get an infinite number of new images, of new relationships between the same object by just twisting the dial. And maybe you can do that inside the box, right? Maybe you can move the pieces around and you'll find the solution is there inside the box. Now, maybe the solution isn't inside the box, but what we gain from exploring that first, what we gain from using language that means something, that's communicating something to each other, that's really helping us understand what the other person is thinking, is much more useful than just simply saying, let's think outside the box. And if you want some language that replaces that, maybe you want to say, let's rotate the box. Or maybe you want to say, let's question the frame of the box. Let's challenge that and see what we learn by challenging that. But again, I like this kaleidoscopic thinking. Boy, that serves us so well in so many instances, right? That the pieces are all there. We just need to find new relationships between them. The value is in the new relationships that we will find because it's a numbers game. We'll keep looking and looking and looking for those new relationships. Well, we got a break coming up, folks. Talk to you on the other side.
You're listening to Exploring Your Creative Genius with Carl Nordgren. Welcome back to Exploring Your Creative Genius. Here's your host, Carl Nordgren.
Welcome back. Thanks for coming back. Thanks for listening to the show. I hope it is helping you become your most creative, your most entrepreneurial, your most innovative self. I sure hope so. I hope that's why you tune in. And so we've got a couple of more quotes for you, phrases for you, as we've been spending our time today working on together. Here's one. I've seen lots of folks who say something really very, very similar to this, and that is that inspiration exists. Inspiration exists, but it must find you working. I like that so much. It's not about sitting back and waiting for inspiration. It's leaning in. It's getting used to it. It's playing with it. It's taking action. It's working at the challenge, working at the problem, and that is going to inspire your fresh thinking, that engagement with the pieces, that engagement with the opportunity, that engagement with other people who are helping you work on this. So inspiration exists, but it must find you working. This is maybe the most recent. I said the one at the top, slow is smooth and smooth is fast, was the most recent I came across. It might be challenged by this one. It's a quote from a Scottish patriot, politician, and writer from the early 1700s. His name was Andrew Fletcher. He wrote this in one of his most renowned periodicals. He later said, no, I didn't come up with this phrase. He quotes it to a friend or attributes to a friend. But here it is. If I could write all the ballads for a country, I would care not who would write its laws. There's so much good truth in that, right? If I can write the ballads for a country, ballads are what? Ballads are stories set to music. So I'm going to translate it into my genre, into my skill set. If I could write the stories for a community, I would care not who would create the laws, because if those stories are true to the community, if those are the community's stories, if the community sees itself in those stories, the laws that it shapes, the policies that it makes, are going to be consistent with that, right? They're going to make the laws and the policies that are consistent with how they see themselves in this story that celebrates them. I think there's great political opportunity in talking to us as truthfully that we are these extraordinarily creative people. And if a leader could say, that's how I see you, I'm going to see you that way from now on, because that's who you are, and that's how I'm going to attend to my policies, and here's the stories that I'm going to tell about us being these wonderful, creative people. Well, again, the laws, the rules, the codification of this story will be consistent with the story, or in the case of Andrew Fletcher, consistent with the ballads that he would like to share with a country. So I'm going to end with a couple of tips. You've heard these tips before, but they're so easy to integrate. Please, please, please look for an opportunity to do so. University of Munich had research maybe about a decade ago now, a little bit longer, where they were trying to determine if color had any impact on creative performance. They were much more ambitious than the typical creativity researchers because they created four very distinct creative challenges for their research. Most researchers rely on just one, and that one is more often than not divergent thinking. How many new ideas, fresh ideas can somebody generate is what they're measuring in most creativity research. Munich had four, University of Munich had four very different creative exercises. And then you know how it works, right? They bring in a group and they just take the test and that's the baseline. One group came in and stared at blue for 30 seconds, another at red, another at yellow, another at gray, which I find interesting, and then another stared at green for 30 seconds. Folks, the participants who stared at red, blue, yellow, and gray had no change on their performance versus the baseline participants. The folks that stared at the color green for 30 seconds had a 25% improvement in their performance. The folks here at the radio station have all of my call sheets in a green folder for me. Why green? Think about why green. There's some good reasons that folks can come up with. If you look out the window right now, the color of growth, and the color of growth everywhere in the world is green. Photosynthesis, one of the most fundamental creative forces, life-giving forces in our world, it generates green. It generates green. Our eyes can detect more shades of green than we can of any other color. So it's not surprising that it's green. I've long suspected that spending time in the woods with all bathed in all that green is part of the reason I can come back out of the woods so supercharged. Well, the full reason is because I walked. And that's the other piece of research I want to tell you about really quickly in our last few seconds. Research out of Stanford says that when you take a walk and reach your natural stride, the two hemispheres of your brain integrate, and that's how you get into your most creative state, is when those left hemisphere and the right hemisphere are working together. So go take a walk, stare at green, and I will talk to you next week. Have a good day.
This has been Exploring Your Creative Genius on 97.9 The Hill. You can listen to other episodes on chapelboro.com.